Welcome to a podcast of a sermon delivered at the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood in New Jersey. Our congregation is a place where you will find inspiration in the richness of diverse beliefs and the power of community. Detailed information about the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood is available on our website, uuridgewood.org.
You may be wondering what on earth UUs can learn from Hindu bhakti poetry. And I imagine that even before that, you're wondering, what the heck is Hindu bhakti poetry? The reason I know anything about it at all is my introduction to Hinduism class back in divinity school. At one point late in the term, we learned about something called bhakti poetry and the bhakti movement. I was entranced with the wisdom of this mystical devotional tradition. The Sanskrit word bhakti, obviously if it's in Sanskrit, it goes way back in the Hindu tradition, and it means devotion or passionate love for the divine. The religion scholar Dr. Dorothy Jacobs explains that during the medieval period of Hinduism, the bhakti movement arose. This was the time when the Puranas, or ancient stories about the gods, really flourished. Dr. Jacobs writes, central were the gods Vishnu, the cosmic king, and Shiva, the great yogi and ascetic known by many names, they all are known by many names, and his feminine counterpart Shakti, or divine energy. Shakti was worshipped both as wife and consort of Shiva, but also in her own right as the great goddess, again, in seemingly infinite numbers of manifestations. The bhakti movement, whose followers sought to become ever closer to God, developed from about 600 to the 1500s and later. And there are many poets today who take inspiration from their tradition. Poets in the 19th century. It actually has two approaches. Saguna bhaktas, and one who's a poet or devotee is called a bhakta, the saguna bhaktas compose verses extolling a god with attributes or forms, closer to our theistic notion of God, but you'll see how it varies. There's also Nirguna Bhaktas, poets who extol the God without and beyond all form. And they are obviously different paths, but both focus on devotion, mystical love for God, and a personal relationship with the divine. Both rejected the caste system that supported the religious hierarchy, who were the Brahmin priests at the top of the Hindu caste system. So that means they really opposed priestly ritual and the priestly use of Sanskrit. So they're quite radical. We're talking about the 600s, the 700s, the Common Era. And accordingly, bhaktas wrote in popular regional languages like Tamil and Hindu. And what entranced me was the saguna bhakti poetry, the kind that has gods with attributes. It has five approaches for reaching God. And these five bhavas are emotional attitudes that a devotee takes toward God according to one's temperament. These five are, first, santa, a placid love of God. And that's seen as actually not, it doesn't bear hardly count because it's such a, sometimes it's seen as sort of a transactional the kind of thing if you pray, you know, I'll be good if you give me this, like a bargaining form of relationship. And that's not the emphasis of most poets. Second, dasya, the attitude of a servant to God the master. Now, I think that's a little hard for us to relate to today because of our egalitarian post-Enlightenment society, but remember the times that this developed in. But the third through the fifth, I think we can relate to most easily. Third is Sakya, the attitude of God as friend, if you can imagine. Fourth is Vatsalya, the attitude of God as beloved child. And five, what you'll hear most examples of today, and possibly the most widespread in bhakti poetry, is Madhura, the attitude of God as lover or beloved. Notice that these are based on actual human experiences of love. Now, our responsive reading, Brahman, from the Bhagavad Gita, illustrates the fundamental notion in Hinduism that there is one essential divine force. But notice, it said, there is no limit to my manifestations. But this is a monotheistic heart to Hinduism. However, as I said, we know these include all of the hundreds of Hindu gods and goddesses. I learned that Krishna is one of the manifestations of the god Vishnu, for example. And Durga is a manifestation of God as mother. The bhakti orientations struck me as so unconventional and delightful. God, the master, as I said, is not so appealing to me in this age, but God, the friend, God, the child, and of course, God, the lover. Now, if we think for just a moment, there are parallels to these passionate devotional attitudes, most obviously in Sufism. And so many of you use are aware of Rumi, the mystical Sufi poet who writes passionately of his love of the holy, of God. There's also, though, think about the cult of Mary and the baby Jesus, God the child. Whole Christian cantatas have been written for Christmas, celebrating God the Child. Yet in our heritage, which comes from Protestant Calvinism, the great Roman Catholic traditions of saints as intermediaries, faces of God perhaps, and a couple thousand years of religious images were eliminated. Even today, the most conservative fundamentalist Christian churches or denominations like the Church of God they really look down on having any pictures in church, some, and even music. That's a lot to eliminate. The larger truths about the divinity in human love that these images and metaphors captured were cut off from us as the Protestants and then the Puritans and later even Unitarians embraced a starker God based on reason and evidence. First, it was evidence from the Bible, say, challenging the Trinity. And later, it was the evidence of reason and scientific inquiry. Truth for us became more literal. But the bhakti tradition personifies the holy in multiple ways. In the time I had for preparing this sermon, I was unable to find poems portraying God the child or God the friend, although I saw images of, especially of the child Krishna playing with human children and embodying friendship as childhood friendship. But by now it's high time you heard a poem. This is by Mirabai, who you'll learn is considered one of the greatest of the bhakti poets, one of the two or three greatest. This is her poem, The Wild Woman of the Forests. The wild woman of the forests discovered the sweet plums by tasting and brought them to her lord. She, who was neither cultured nor lovely, she, who was filthy in disarrayed clothes, she of the lowest of castes. But the Lord, seeing her heart, took the ruined plums from her hand. She saw no difference between low and high, wanting only the milk of his presence. Illiterate, she never studied the teachings. A single turn of the chariot's wheel brought her to knowledge. Now she is bound to the storm-bodied one by gold cords of love and wanders his woods. Servant Mira says, whoever can love like this will be saved. My master lifts all that is fallen, and from the beginning I have been the handmaiden herding cows by his side. Notice several things about this poem. For instance, transgression. Mirabai, also known as Mira, you heard many of these poems end with the poet speaking about herself or himself in the third person. She said, Mira says. But notice she's a wild woman of the forest, neither cultured nor lovely, filthy, in disarrayed clothes, the lowest of castes. Her mystical devotion allows her to transcend the priestly rules of the Vedas, social custom, women's roles, even the caste system. In fact, many bhakti movements, and they were in different parts of India, the south, the north, many were open to women and to all castes. You can see why bhakti poetry, songs, and devotional practices are often seen as insurrectionary and socially radical. In this poem, Mirabai expresses her devotion as servant to master. But she's more typically known as searching for God the Beloved. Her God is Krishna. Krishna is known for dancing. He's the statues of Krishna always show him with his leg up like this. He is also known for his dark color and the legend that he once lifted a mountain. And all these are found in Mirabai's poems. She calls God the Dark One and the Clever Mountain Lifter. In the next poem, by the way, she happens to address Krishna as Gridhara. So I'm sure there's that he is a local manifestation or something of Krishna. Love has stained my body to the color of the one who holds up mountains. When I dressed in the world's five fabrics, I only played hide and seek. For disguised though I was, the lifting one caught me. And seeing his beauty, I offered him all that I am. Friends, let those whose beloved is absent write letters. Mine dwells in the heart and neither enters nor leaves. Mira has given herself to her Lord Giridhara. Day or night, she serves only him. Sometimes the devotee's passion includes a feeling of going mad. Sometimes the passion of mystical union is brief and twinned with a longing to recapture the bliss of union with the divine. Christopher Wallace writes that bhakti poetry was revolutionary because it, quote, introduced a style of devotional poetry that was intensely personal, emotive, and seemingly spontaneous. It eschewed poetic artifice in favor of frank emotional expression, much more closely linked to real human experience, including, for the first time, that of women, than did the Sanskrit literature up to that time. These vernacular works did not shy away from the full range of human emotional expression, including frustration and despair, as well as ecstasy and gratitude. Listen to this one. Oh, friends, I am mad with love, and no one sees. My mattress is a sword point. How can I sleep when the bed of my beloved is spread open elsewhere? Only those who have felt the knife can understand the wound. Only the jeweler knows the nature of the jewel. I have lost it, And though anguish takes me door to door, no doctor answers. Mira calls her Lord. O Dark One, only you can heal this pain. Now Mirabai was a princess, a few facts about her life, who lived during the time of the Mughal Empire in India. Also, Mughal is the root of the word mogul, that we talk about the wealthy moguls of, you know, industry. It comes from Mughal. And the Mughals formed a great empire in India. And she's from the time when the Mughal Emperor Akbar ruled. Her family vehemently disapproved of this worship of Krishna. They married Mirabai off at a young age to another royal, linking to another royal family. But the legend has it that there were constant quarrels. And according to legend, she left home to live the life of a wandering saint. Here is her poem, Why Mira Can't Go Back to Her Old Home. The colors of the Dark One have penetrated Mira's body, all the other colors washed out. Making love with the Dark One and eating little. These are my pearls and my carnelians. Meditation beads and the forehead streak. Those are my scarves and my rings. That's enough feminine wiles for me. My teacher taught me this. Approve me or disapprove me. I praise the mountain energy night and day. I take the path that ecstatic human beings have taken for centuries. I don't steal money. I don't hit anyone. What will you charge me with? I have felt the swaying of the elephant's shoulders. And now you want me to climb on a jackass? Try to be serious. Here is another one. I write of that journey. Also by Mirabai. I remember how my mother would hold me. I would look up at her sometimes and see her weep. I understand now what was happening. Love, so strong a force, it broke the cage, and she disappeared from everything for a blessed moment. All actions have evolved from the taste of flight. The hope of freedom moves our cells and limbs. Unable to live on the earth, Mira ventured out alone in the sky. I write of that journey of becoming as free as God. Don't forget love. It will bring all the madness you need to unfurl yourself across the universe. And here is, for now, the last poem from Mirabai. From Mirabai. The earth looked at him and began to dance. Mira knows why, for her soul too is in love. If you cannot picture God in a way that always strengthens you, you need to read more of my poems. And now we move on to a new poet, Janabai, a 13th century poet born to a low caste family. However, she was sent to work in the upper caste family of Namdev, a revered bhakti poet saint. If I'd tried, I could have found some poems by Namdev. And she herself became a poet also devoted to Krishna. Now, in this poem, Janabai imagines herself throwing off social convention that enshrines women's honor, literally throwing off her clothing, to go sing and dance in the marketplace, a metaphor for throwing off all inhibitions, all social norms, and everything that separates her from God. In this poem, by the way, there's the word veena, it's a stringed instrument, and the word palav, is the end of her sari. Get ready for a radical poem. She writes, "Cast off all shame and sell yourself in the marketplace. Then alone can you hope to reach the Lord. Symbols in hand, a vina upon my shoulder, I go about. Who dares to stop me? The pallav of my sari falls away, a scandal. Yet will I enter the crowded marketplace without a thought. Johnny says, my Lord, I have become a whore to reach your home." Here is a short poem to God the Beloved by the 12th century bhakti poet Mahadevi. Now, she was a devotee of Shiva, who is as white as Krishna is known as being dark. So you'll hear references to his whiteness. She writes, "Riding the blue sapphire mountains, wearing moonstone for slippers, blowing long horns. Oh Shiva, when shall I crush you on my pitcher breasts? Oh Lord, white as jasmine, when do I join you stripped of body's shame and heart's modesty?" Heady stuff, isn't it? The two greatest bhakti poets are considered to be Mirabai and Kabir. Kabir, a man for a change. They weren't all women, lots of men. He lived about a century earlier than Mirabai, born in either 1400 or 1440, depending on the historian you choose. And Kabir is actually fascinating because he was born into a Muslim family of weavers. And so there's a whole mixture of influences on him, Muslim and Hindu. He was, however, a follower of the bhakti poet saint Swami Ramananda, and he lived in the holy Hindu city of Varanasi, also known as Benares. Kabir rejected, he knew, and rejected both the formal texts of Islam and Hinduism, the Quran and the Vedas, and their sacred rituals. He saw them as meaningless rites. He believed that God was inside every person and everything. He is one of, remember I mentioned two forms of bhakti poetry, that with and without attributes? Now, he is one of the great Nirguna bhakti who takes the opposite tack of the personified saguna poetry that I've focused on so far. But because he brings to mind, I think, a lot of contemporary mystic influences and poetry that we're more familiar with today, I want to read one of his poems. This is his poem, "What Kind of God?" Notice the universalism in this poem. "What kind of God would he be if he did not hear the bangles ring on an ant's wrist as they move the earth in their sweet dance? And what kind of God would he be if a leaf's prayer was not as precious to creation as the prayer his own son sang from the glorious depth of his soul for us? And what kind of God would he be if the vote of millions in this world could sway him to change the divine law of love that speaks so clearly with compassion's elegant tongue, saying, eternally saying, all are forgiven. Moreover, dears, no one has ever been guilty. What kind of God would he be if he did not count the blinks of your eyes and is in absolute awe of their movements? What a God. What a God we have." So, what can you gain from bhakti poetry? UUs are not known for their mystics. Although we have a rich tradition of seeking the transcendent, especially in nature. For example, from the 19th century New England Transcendentalists. According to the Encyclopedia of Philosophy, or one of the encyclopedias, quote, "What is most valuable in the legacy of transcendentalism is the practices by which the transcendentalists managed, at least occasionally, to remake the world in the image of what they loved." The best-known transcendentalists were, of course, Ralph Waldo Emerson and Henry David Thoreau, and I would argue that poet Mary Oliver, whose nature poetry is sometimes jokingly referred to as UU scripture, follows in Thoreau's tradition. Now, the German philosopher Immanuel Kant's influence also shows itself, according to this encyclopedia, in the view of the nature of beauty embraced by the transcendentalists, namely that it surpasses all understanding. Contemplating beauty and longing for the perfect is analogous to the Bhakti poet's contemplation of and desire to merge with God. Perhaps the most famous experience of beauty described by Emerson is the one in which he became, quote, "a transparent eyeball, alone in the woods," and I quote, "head bathed by the blithe air and uplifted into infinite space, he found that he had vanished from his own experience." This sounds like the bhakti merging with the divine, the goal of all mystical paths. So we have mysticism in our history. But when Protestantism left behind the Catholic saints, and if and when we reject the notion of God or the holy in human form, we also lose the immense power of metaphor to tap into all the human experiences of love in their varied forms. A love that I, at least, substitute for a traditional theistic God. Evangelical Christians have personal devotional relationships to Jesus that can be fervent and devout. However, it is exclusive. And this view sees Jesus as the only manifestation of God. Unlike the Brahman that lies at the heart of Hinduism's pantheon of divinities. And I am a universalist. I believe in the power of human reason. I, for better or worse, am not a mystic, since I have not had that capacity experienced in my own life, at least yet. But might it not make it easier to experience the transcendent power of love if we imagine it as the love for a child, a friend, the beloved, one's beloved? For the mystic within us, and it may be a very small part of us, or the part of us that reaches beyond for transcendent beauty, love, or goodness, for that part of us, I offer you the gift of bhakti poetry. Let me close with one last poem by Mirabai. I chose this because it has rhythm. It's translated by someone sensitive to the rhythm of her poetry, which you haven't heard yet. "I'm colored with the color of dusk, O Rana, colored with the color of my Lord. Drumming out the rhythm on the drums I danced, dancing in the presence of the saints, colored with the color of my Lord. They thought me mad for the maddening one, raw for my dear dark love, colored with the color of my Lord. The Rana sent me a poison cup. I didn't look, I drank it up, colored with the color of my Lord. The clever mountain lifter is the Lord of Mira. Life after life, he's true. Colored with the color of my Lord." May we all feel at least sometime, such passionate, holy transcendence. Amen.